Hello, PhD is hiring a cue card holder for one of the co-hosts who cannot read. Welcome to Hello, PhD, a podcast for scientists and the people who love them. On this episode, we are giddy with excitement about this week's Pluto flyby, and we tell you how to know when it's time to move on to another job. Stay with us.
And we're back. Welcome to Hello, PhD. I'm Joshua Hall.
And I'm Daniel Arneman.
And we're here to talk about the research world, the science culture. And Dan, what's new this week?
Well, we had some very exciting news.
We did have some good news this week. It was a very, very exciting week in the Hello, PhD world. So we are airing our third episode. And just after the second episode aired, I happened to log into iTunes, actually for a different purpose. And I was on the Science and Medicine podcast page, and guess which podcast was on the new and noteworthy page right on the front page there?
I just would hate to even try to guess.
Hello, PhD.
Is that right? That's exciting.
Our humble blue graphic with our flask was right there on the front page, and I let out a squee.
What exactly is it? Do I want to ask what that sounds like?
I will not recreate that. That's not for everybody's benefit.
Yeah. It's very, very exciting for us. And so in honor of that, we have some semi-special ethanol.
Yes. So Dan was very careful to say our ethanol of the week, which would leave us open for not just beer, but other forms of ethanol as well. So what are we drinking this week?
Yeah. So I think it's safe to say we are very surprised. Maybe we're not surprised because there are so few episodes or so few podcasts in the science and medicine podcast.
That is one option. The N could be very low.
I'm assuming that is the only option. But I happen to have lying around some, what is this? This is a sweet sparkling Moscato Rosé that a friend of mine was trying to get rid of. He gave me three bottles of wine. One of them I turned down.
We are popping the bubbly for this high... an exciting moment. My goodness, that surprised me. That was loud in the earphones, and there's foam everywhere. It's like New Year's here on the Hello PhD podcast.
I suspect this is going to be really disgusting.
Nothing but the finest. We are celebrating with some sparkling wine that was in Dan's friend's fridge for a long time.
Well, I assume it was in the fridge. I actually put it in the car to bring home, and he said to me, "Are you sure you want to leave it in the car?" And I said, "Yeah, it's probably going to be fine." How's that taste?
Well, you know, I'm not actually a big champagne sparkling wine fan in general, but I don't turn down free drinks.
Like Kool-Aid with bubbles.
There you go. You know, I think as a scientist, one of the things you learn to do are celebrate the small victories.
I'm with you on that.
And
yeah.
So that is what we are doing right now.
Why not?
But what we do want to do, in all seriousness, is thank you to everybody who has listened so far. We've gotten lots of really good feedback, and we're just really happy for all of you out there who have taken the time out to listen. If you like what you hear so far, certainly tell your friends, tell your colleagues, tell other scientists who you think might enjoy listening and being part of the dialogue we're having. We would love to have you listen, but even more, we would love to hear from you. So if there are things you'd like for us to talk about on a future show, questions, comments you have, please do send them in. We would love to talk about them.
Yeah, this doesn't work if people don't write in and don't communicate on Facebook and on Twitter and on the webpage. And I want to throw in one defense of this wine. It does say product of Italy very prominently. So I'm sure they're trying to dump it from the ports.
So we will sip our fine Italian bubbly while we talk about what's going on.
Oh, there was another group in the news that I'm sure popped some bubbly this week, and hopefully it was a better quality than what I had sitting around in the fridge.
Are you talking about NASA?
I am so excited about this.
So Dan, what happened this week?
So 10 years ago, they launched an explorer that finally made it to Pluto, and now we're getting higher resolution images back from this satellite or this rocket that has been traveling it, I don't know, for a decade. It's
2006. The New Horizons Explorer was launched. And, you know, I actually wonder if these guys have been a little bummed out over the years, because when they launched this thing, Pluto was actually a planet. Now Pluto is not a planet.
I think it's got to be a planet. I heard one of the guys interviewed, and the interviewer asked, is Pluto a planet? And he said, yeah, it's a planet.
What
does that even mean?
I've heard Neil deGrasse Tyson speak on this issue, and he's a very avid proponent of not planet. But I have to admit, this is in no way any expertise of mine. I have no idea what's going on other than Pluto looks neat.
Did you learn the mnemonic in grade school or whatever about the planets?
I didn't. What would that be?
There were several. The one that I learned was Mary Venus eats many juicy suckers under Nora's porch, which just doesn't work without porch.
Yeah, it leaves you hanging there without
it does,
the porch.
It does.
So I think we're pretty much stuck with Pluto.
I'm arguing for planet.
So let's shift gears to some things we maybe know a little bit about. I want to talk a little bit about this conversation that I had with a friend of mine. And one of the things we were discussing were jobs. And so my friend was basically came across a job posting that, in his words, were a dream job. It's his dream job.
That's a good sign.
That's a good sign, right? We all would like to wake up and see a job posting for what we would call our dream job.
If you hear of a nightmare job, do not apply for it.
That's true. Do not do
life that. Lesson.
However, the conundrum he had was he had just received a promotion at work and had convinced himself that, you know, because of this promotion, these new responsibilities, this new opportunities that he had, he should stick with it for at least two or three more years, even though maybe it wasn't the long-term thing he wanted to do. You know, he wanted to honor that promotion and kind of stick with that for a while.
Honor that promotion or obligation?
Well, that's a good point.
It sounds ominous.
It does. It does. And so, you know, so then the thing we're talking about is when is the right time to make a move? Because I think we can often feel like as we get involved in a job, even if it's not, maybe if we know on some level that a job is not our ideal situation, we kind of do develop a sense of wanting to see it through. I think this happens a lot in science as well, especially as graduate students, as postdocs, as technicians, where, you know, we can easily fall into this pattern of, well, I just want to wrap up this one piece of the project, right? Or I couldn't leave right now because I just want to get this one more paper out. And sometimes that's okay, but it got me to thinking about when is the right time to move, especially if you're thinking about making a move into something that's a little bit different than what you've been doing before.
And is that the case for your friend? Is he going into a kind of different path, or is it an extension of what he's got now?
You know, I think it seemed a little bit related with what he was doing. It seemed to be a natural progression. I think the big stumbling block for him was, in his mind, this was not exactly the time when he was thinking about making a move. And
yeah,
so
I
think we often make plans for ourselves. We have these mental timelines, and sometimes it's hard for us to then step off those timelines, even if something really appealing comes about. And so what it got me thinking about was a time in my life where I really faced a very similar situation. And that was when I was a postdoc. And my goal for most of my scientific training, from being an undergraduate through postdoc, was I wanted to be a faculty member at a small liberal arts institution where I could do some research, but more in the context of teaching.
Now, last I checked, that was not precisely the path you took.
That is not at all the path I took. So, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't end up there, but...
Oh, you ruined it. I was going to read the biography.
But I'm actually very happy and probably much happier than I ever would have been if I would have seen that path through to fruition.
So what was the decision?
So the decision was, everything was actually going very smoothly on my path to tenure track at small university path. Following graduation with my PhD in microbiology, I received a fellowship to a teaching postdoc program. So these are specialized postdoc programs where, in addition to getting research experience, you also have the opportunity to get actual classroom teaching experience at the university level as well.
And are you teaching undergrads, graduate students?
Yeah, so this is teaching undergraduates. So what these positions do, what these fellowships do, is they really set a postdoc up to make that transition to an institution where there is a teaching focus. And so, honestly, so this fellowship was the ideal stepping stone for me moving towards a career like the one I thought I wanted coming out of graduate school.
Are those widely available? Do people have those at a lot of different universities, or is it a very specific, specialized program?
So the program that I was part of was part of an NIH mechanism called the IRACDA program. IRACDA. And
okay.
Don't ask me what that stands for. I don't remember.
I'm arachnophobic, so.
I am too. No, they're just kidding. I love the IRACDA program. However, there are multiple of these programs throughout the country. So I happen to go to the one at my institution, but there are many more.
Okay, so they fund this around the country at different universities.
Absolutely. And the purpose of these programs, in a lot of ways, is to instill in researchers sort of innovative teaching strategies to take with them to these smaller universities. And so anyhow, I was about a year and a half into this fellowship program, and I was working in the lab, and I had reached the part in the fellowship program where I would begin the teaching part, which was the whole point in doing the teaching postdoc.
Sounds like a dream job.
It was. And so I was all ready to go, ready to do that, had been gearing up for this for really years, and I was excited. I was finally good to do it. And around that time, I came into lab one day, and an email came across my screen with a job posting for a new position at my institution to run some educational programs, do some science outreach, mentor students. And as I was reading this, I actually had a physiological response. Like, my heart started beating faster. And
like, excited, or you had arachnophobia again?
I think this was excitement.
Okay.
Followed by fear, because what I realized in reading this was, wow, this job description, it's like it's describing me.
Wow, yeah. And your sympathetic nervous system doesn't lie to you, right?
Yeah, and I think what so caught me off guard was I was not at all looking for a job. I mean, it was a mundane weekday. I was coming in, getting ready to get my experiments planned for the day, and suddenly I read a job posting, and it kind of rocked my world a little bit. And then I was faced with the same decision my friend had, really, is, well, what do I do?
Yeah.
Because this is not at all, this was not in my mental framework of what I was going to be doing with my life right now. And so, long story.
And it was a great opportunity. I mean, you were in a great opportunity in the program you were in. So it's not as if it was a zero cost decision to make. That seems very difficult.
Absolutely. It's leaving something that's not necessarily bad, but maybe not the best thing for you, to try out something that's a little more of an unknown, but you have a feeling that it actually is a better fit for what you want to do. And I think that was my friend's conundrum as well.
Sounds similar.
It's not necessarily, we're not always just leaving a terrible job that we hate to go to a much better job. Sometimes it's much more nuanced than that.
Well, and then there's no conversation about it. There's no decision to make. If you hate the job you're in and a really great job comes along, take the really great job.
Exactly.
If you can get it.
Exactly. And you know, this represented stepping off of a track, stepping off of a research track that I'd been on for a long time. That had been the goal for a number of years. And so even though a position can seem like the ideal thing, it's not trivial to just walk away from something you've devoted a lot of time to.
That's right. And so where's the balance? How do you decide? Where is the point at which you say, this other thing is good, but it's not enough, and I want to take the new opportunity, even though it's an unknown, which carries a lot of, you know, perceived risk with it?
Well, I think what I realized, I eventually came to the conclusion that this is my life. I have one life, and I'm the only one who has to live my life. And so one thing I didn't mention was I actually did seek advice from, you know, from mentors and other people who had sort of been with me through my training. But one thing I found was, you know, one trap you can fall into as a graduate student, as a postdoc, is if you spend too much time in the academic world, most of the voices around you are also in that same world. And so I actually got a little bit of caution or pushback about trying something different, because a lot of the thoughts and advice stemmed from, well, you're so close to this faculty position.
Which is what they valued.
Exactly. How could you step away from pursuing that?
And did you get cases where people's fear kind of came out and they projected it to you? I've had situations where I'm going to make a decision that feels great to me, and the response is, but did you think about this? And did you think about this? And it's all of their anxieties and their neuroses coming to play and put onto you. And then you start to think, well, I didn't think about that, and I didn't think about this.
Oh, absolutely. And some of the most powerful words, too, were things like, you know, if you leave this research track, it's going to be really hard to come back. And it's like, there's no coming back.
Yeah, you stepped out of the airlock and the door sealed.
And, you know, now I look at it, you know, 5-6 years later and think, wow, why would I want to go back? Because that wasn't the best fit for me. And but eventually, as I was saying, the point I came to was, you know what? I'm appreciative for all of this advice and these perspectives, but I'm the only one who has to wake up in my shoes every day and go to work where I go to work and do the things that I do. And this seems like it's me. This seems like the job that I was made to do, the job that I could do better than anyone else. And I was thinking about, you know, being a postdoc or being a faculty member at a small university, I probably could have done okay, but do I feel like this is the job I could do better than anyone else? Well, no, not necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I'm picking up a couple of things in the way you're talking about it that I think are key for other people making similar decisions. What you're not saying is somebody offered me a bunch more money and it seemed like I wanted more money, so I went and took it. What you're saying is I understood what I wanted, which is, I think, extremely critical and very difficult. We've all gone through places where we didn't know what we wanted. And if you don't know what you want, nobody can help you get there. It's a really tough place to be. There are ways to get through it. But it sounds like you knew what you wanted. It was the right kind of work. And then it was a question of safety or stepping up to that challenge and taking the risk. But it's really not a risk because there's a bigger risk at staying where you are if you're not going to be happy in the long term.
And that's the point that I came to, because another thing that had happened in the background was over time, especially towards the end of graduate school as I got into my postdoc, was I realized I was devoting more and more mental time to questioning the career path I'd been on. I mean, you know, like anyone who's been a postdoc, I mean, at that point I'd devoted years of my life to working in the research lab. And so it was very scary to think about leaving that behind when I devoted so much time to it. And it's absolutely right what you said, that I think because I had a good idea of what I wanted to do is the only reason, A, that I was able to realize that when that job posting came through, that it was the right fit for me.
Yeah, you had already done the homework.
I had. And one of the things that I did, actually, that I would encourage, and I have encouraged a lot of students that I've worked with to do, is I actually got to the place where I would write down, I would physically write down during my day things I did that I liked to do that gave me energy and things I would do that I didn't like to do that made me feel like I wanted to put my head down and cry.
So give us an example.
So some examples. So I was
how
mentoring.
Often did you have your head down crying?
not too often. I'm a pretty optimistic person. But
very weepy. I don't know what's going on.
But one of the things I was doing that I got the most energy from was I was mentoring an undergraduate, and I had mentored some rotation students as well. And I loved working with students in that way, and not just working with them in the research arena, but what I really liked doing was talking to them about their career choices, especially undergraduates, talking to them about their next steps, what they wanted to do after graduation, talking to graduate students about what labs they wanted to join. I actually... actually got a little bit of flack from my postdoc PI when I was having a conversation with one of our rotation students who was fantastic, and he was weighing our lab versus another lab when deciding a lab to join. And I was just asking him some questions, and that led to him actually picking the other lab.
Ouch. And the PI overheard?
Well, no, it just got back to her, and it was kind of a funny joke, but I realized I really enjoyed talking to students about their careers and their decisions, and I enjoyed that even more than my own sort of research findings. I also enjoyed writing grants. I enjoyed writing. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I enjoyed that part. And so a lot of the things that this new job would have me doing were working with students, doing some grant writing, doing things like outreach, interfacing with science, but more in an outward-facing way, more communications way. Compared to being at the bench every day.
I think this is more really good advice, and people can do this tomorrow. They can do this today. As you're sitting in the lab or as you're going about your normal day, take a few minutes to recognize when you're losing track of time. So if you're losing track of time, that means you are fully engaged in what you're doing, and that's probably a good indicator that you like it. And if you can kind of see the pattern as you go through your day, you will have a much better sense about the type of work you want to do. When I was in lab, you know, I I'll tell the story someday, but I really struggled through a lot of aspects of being in graduate school. But I had a mouse colony, and I built myself a database of the mice and all of their parentages and lineages and all of their traits. I loved building that database. And now I work in data all day long. So noticing things like that helped me realize maybe I'm not going to be at the bench, but I do like this other aspect, and there are good things for me even where I am.
Absolutely. And that's a great story because that's something that now you do that was not even the primary thing that you were trying to do.
Something random that I probably didn't even need to do it, but the fact is I wanted to, I was motivated to, and what a great indicator that I'd probably want to do it some more, and I do it, and I love it.
Yeah, and I think the advice from that is just pay attention to your life and pay attention to how you feel when you're doing different things, because I know at least for me, I love the job that I do. Someday in the future, I'll talk a little bit more about sort of my career and the types of things that I do since my research training, but I would have likely never even noticed that position or at least been able to make that leap had I not been in a mind space where I was very aware of myself and very aware of the types of things that I was looking for in a career. Only because I had done that work was I able to make the jump when the opportunity came along.
Yeah, you're not going to fall into it. You really have to do the homework, and no one's going to do it for you. They can't do it. They can't know what it is that motivates you. So don't, you know, if you don't love the position you're in, don't wait until somebody offers you something better. You've got to do the work.
Yeah, and the other thing that goes along with that is there's a step that comes before looking for new jobs, applying for new jobs, and that is putting in the work to think about who you are, what your skills are, what your interests are, what gives you energy. And once you identify that, once you have that self-awareness of the type of job, position, duties that you like to do and want to do, only then do you know what your dream job is going to be.
That's right. Maximize the stuff you like, minimize the stuff you don't, the stuff that makes you weep on the table.
less weeping.
Less weeping. That seems like a good idea. And I want to add, so there are times not to take that step. I think there are some red flags. So if you think that making a little bit of extra money or a little bit of extra prestige is going to be worth doing a job you don't like. So in the same way that you read over that job description and your heart started beating faster because it sounded like it described you, I have read hundreds of job descriptions that just made me sick. they turn your stomach, and you read them and you apply to them because you haven't found something better and you need to find work. But you know, I think you know pretty deep down that it's not a good fit for you. And also consider what you're giving up in terms of some of the side benefits of the work you're in. So I left a pretty stable, easy job near my house working for the university. And I wanted to do kind of more cutting edge work and something more innovative with more data and more challenge. But what I gave up is being close to home and having the extra free time to do other things. So I guess I have free time because I'm sitting here recording a podcast, but things are much tighter. And so looking back, I thought to myself, oh, I wish I had taken more advantage of those benefits I had. I loved having access to the university library. These are just things that, little side perks that you do give up and change. But if you find that right thing, you got to make the move.
Yeah, pay attention to all of those things and think about what are the things that are important to me.
So that's all we'll say about finding a new job. If you have taken a new position or you've made this tough decision, if some of this kind of resonated with you, let us know about it. Tweet to us, write to us on Facebook, or email us at podcast@hellophd.com. That's the email address. I'll get it right one of these days. And we would love to hear from you and give reports on some of the decisions you made. Let us talk about the word of the week, the etymology.
Oh, word of the week. I always look forward to this.
I'm going to throw you a softball this week. You'll like this one.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's related to the word last week, so that's your clue.
Last week was autoclave.
Autoclave. Do you remember where it came from?
Autoclave was a mix of Greek and Latin.
That's right.
Self key, self-sealing, self-locking.
That's right. So today's word is clavicle, which is the name for the collarbone.
Clavicle.
So it shares something in common with autoclave. Hopefully you'll...
Key.
You got it. You got it exactly right. So
I can be taught.
There's hope for you yet. Comes from the same Latin root, clavis. And it's actually the diminutive form. It's clavicle, so it's like a small key. And I looked at a few sources for the origin of this word and why the collarbone is called small key. And none of them really agree, and I think two out of the three are probably wrong. I'll tell you which one I actually agree with.
So this is a big etymological controversy.
I doubt it. I'm sure somebody knows the answer somewhere.
This is debated in the etymology literature.
Yeah, the sources I saw give different reasons, and they're all related to key. So one source says that it is locking the shoulder joint in place. So if you think about your clavicle, it runs from around your sternum to your shoulder girdle, and it locks that in place. So you can reach across your body without your shoulder collapsing or without your chest collapsing. One says...
I'm actually trying this.
Yeah, you should do
as
it.
As we speak.
Oh, your chest collapsed. That's so... I guess it didn't work. Another source said that it turns as you abduct your shoulder. And I've put my hand on my clavicle and I couldn't feel it twisting or turning like a key. And then the last one said it's key-shaped. That's the one I believe.
Fascinating. I like that. It's probably the easiest, most straightforward.
Yeah, and there are no more real great science words with clavis in them. There's lots of references to subclavian things.
So we have exhausted.
But here's where you're going to use this in the real world. When they elect a new pope, they have a conclave, which means locked together.
There you have it.
So now you know.
Now you know.
You can go use that in a sentence somewhere.
Thanks for that, Dan.
You're welcome.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you all, as always, for listening. If you would like to get in touch with us, send us a question for a future show, we would love to talk about you right here on Hello PhD. You can email us, podcast@hellophd.com, tweet at us @HelloPhD. And now we have a new Facebook page, which we would love to see you on there. So just throw a comment on the Facebook page and we would love to respond to you that way as well. We will see you next time.
Do you need another glass of this sparkling rosé?
I think I'm good.
Okay. Music for the podcast is performed by the Doug Largent Trio. Check them out at DougLargent.com.